Thank you, Dave. Great job on the parasha. Great application. Well, as Rabbi Lauren mentioned this morning, it's been the theme of our songs. It's going to be the theme of this morning's drasha, evangelism. And yes, it is your calling. I just love it when people say, you know, I don't feel called to do it. Your feelings on this are irrelevant when it comes to God's command. It is your calling. So the first part of what I want to share with you this morning, and it's less a sermon, more of just kind of a talk and an encouragement, a little pep talk to the team. First thing I want to talk about is why every follower of Yeshua should be in the habit of sharing the gospel. We should be in the habit of it. I've got 7 reasons for those of you who like outlines, and those of you who are actually going to take notes. Why every follower of Yeshua should be in the habit of sharing the gospel. And you'll love the first one. Yeshua told us to. In Matthew 28, Yeshua came up and spoke to them saying, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all the nations." Mark chapter 16, Yeshua again reiterating this, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation." Acts chapter 1, Yeshua's among his very last words before he ascended to heaven, he said, "You shall be my witnesses, both in Jerusalem and in all Judea and Samaria and even to the remotest part of the earth." So the first reason to share the gospel is because Yeshua told us to. Second reason, obedience pleases God. And I don't need to say anything more about that. Third reason, sharing the gospel reflects our gratitude for what he's done for us. A little later this morning, and if you want, you can bookmark it now, we're going to be looking at Isaiah chapter 6 as a real perfect motif for this. But when we share the gospel, because he told us to, it's reflecting also the fact that we're grateful for what he's done for us. Number 4, and this is kind of important, it proves we are his disciples and not just religious folks. Because the world doesn't need more religion. Luke chapter 6, Yeshua said, "Why do you call me Lord when you won't obey me?" Number 5, why every follower of Yeshua should be in the habit of sharing the gospel is, by default, human beings are lost and need to be redeemed. And the gospel is the message of that redemption. And think about it this way. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. If your neighbor needs to hear the message of redemption, and you are a possessor of that message, loving them as you love yourself means you're going to tell them what they need to hear in order to be saved. Number 6, people need to hear and understand the gospel before they can believe it. Romans chapter 10, Rabbi Paul writes this, "But how can they call on him to save them unless they believe in him? And how can they believe in him if they've never heard about him? And how can they hear about him unless someone tells them?" And please don't leave it to the TV preachers to be the ones to tell them. And number 7, don't we want to hear God say to us, "Well done"? All right, so now let's take this message to the practical level. I think these 7 points are 7 valid points on why every follower of Yeshua should be in the habit of sharing the gospel. So what stops us from evangelizing? And how do we overcome those things? And apparently these things really do seem to stop us from evangelizing. Alexandra and I were just reflecting yesterday on the fact that every year when we invite people to go out to the Ann Arbor Art Fair and share the gospel with us, or go out to Art Speech and Eats and share the gospel with us, or go to the Woodward Dream Cruise and share the gospel with us, we pretty much know the 7 or 8 people who are just faithfully there every time. I'm looking at a room of about 80 people. Enough said? Okay. I'm very good at guilt tripping. Okay. But seriously, there are things that stop us. There are fears that we have. And I want to help us to get past those fears. It's not rocket science, and it really isn't that difficult. So let's talk about what stops us from evangelizing, and then let's talk about how do we overcome those things. Number one, the fear of people thinking that we are weird or fanatical. Right? Well, solution number one. So what? God's opinion of us, God's opinion of us is the only one that matters. That's the first solution. Solution number two, this is really easy and it can be fun. Plead guilty as charged. Yes, I'm weird. Yes, I'm a Jesus freak. But then remind them that it's not about you. You're not the issue. So it really doesn't matter what they think of you. First of all, God's opinion is the one that matters. Secondly, fine, plead guilty. Yes, I'm a weirdo. But this isn't about me. Solution number three, and think about this for a minute. Don't we all love to talk about the things that interest us? Don't we all love to talk about our passions? Alexandra loves to talk about art. I love to talk about motorcycles. Rabbi Lauren loves to talk about gardening, right? I mean, we all love to talk naturally about the things we love. So why shouldn't we? All right. The next fear, the next thing that I think stops some of us from doing the work of evangelism that we're supposed to do is the fear of not having answers to people's questions, right? Okay, so we're afraid people think we're weird. Guilty as charged, right? Number two, we're afraid we won't have answers to some of their questions. Well, solution number one. People find honesty refreshing. If you don't have the answer to a particular question, admit it. Besides, nobody has the answers to every question. Just admit it. Solution number two goes along with this. Offer to research that question. Offer to look it up and get back with that person. This is a great way of doing things. If you don't know the answer that you know, it's a valid question. I don't know the answer to that, but I tell you what, I'll start researching that this week. Why don't we get together for coffee in 2 weeks and let's talk about it some more? You realize that you've now created a second opportunity to meet with that person? You see what's happening? You're building a relationship. And by the way, if they don't want to hear back from you, it's a sure bet that that question wasn't the issue anyway. It was just an attempt to deflect. And how do you determine if that's the real question? If that's the thing that's really on their heart? Well, the first thing is they'll agree to get back with you if you're willing to look it up. And the second thing is, if you offer to look that up and they're not willing, again, it just shows that that wasn't really the thing. And what you can do is you can ask with a question, something like this. Is that the thing that's really stopping you? Does that question keep you up at night? And if they, well, no, I mean, you know, I'm just, then you know that that's not really the issue. One of the beautiful things about faithfully doing the work of sharing the gospel is that as you interact with people, you become an observer of human behavior. You learn about motivation. You learn to read people. You learn to hear their words, but also to read between the lines. You learn to read facial expression and posture and vocal inflection. It helps you to grow in discernment. It's a very good thing to do. And solution number three, discovering what you don't know is a great opportunity for you to learn and to grow in your faith. Somebody asks you a question about Scripture, about God, about the Bible. You don't have the answer. This gives you an opportunity to go back to the Word, to research it, to study. And in the process of preparing to help that person with the answer to their question, you yourself are going to grow. You're going to send your roots deeper. Then there's the fear. This is our third fear. The third thing that sometimes keeps us from doing what we're supposed to do is the fear of being hypocritical, especially if there's ongoing sin in your life. And you're thinking, how can I talk to people about Messiah and I'm all screwed up? Well, solution number one, turn away from the sin. Simple enough, but easier said than done. Turn away from the sin so that you know you're not being hypocritical. Solution number two kind of goes with this. Instead of being afraid of being a hypocrite, think instead of your desire to come to that place of integrity and consistency and sincerity, and pursue those things while also at the same time obediently sharing your faith with others. Don't make it a one or the other proposition. You can be sharing your faith while you are endeavoring to walk more faithfully with the Lord. Solution number three, guaranteed the person you're talking to has their own sin, their own hypocrisy, their own inconsistencies. It's not like you're the only one. And think about this. If only perfect people were allowed to share the gospel, it would never get shared. Solution number four goes back to the thing I said earlier. A reminder, it isn't about you. It's about people's need for redemption and Yeshua's infinite power to redeem them. What's the next fear? What keeps us from faithfully sharing the gospel like we should? And I think this is a big one. I know this one has been kind of a big one for me. Maybe I'm speaking to somebody else here. Not knowing where to start. How to initiate the conversation. Am I alone or? Yeah, okay, I thought so. All right, well, we've got some solutions for that one too. Because even though I like to talk, I am kind of shy. Where do you start? How do you initiate a conversation? First thing I want to tell you is that I believe it was Chesterton, am I right? Alexander is Chesterton who talked about launchers. Wilberforce. Okay, William Wilberforce talked about launchers, ways to start a conversation or ways to turn a conversation to the things of God. Launchers. And almost anything can serve as a launcher. It only takes a little bit of mental energy and preparation, just a little, to think up an appropriate question for whatever venue you happen to be at. If, for example, you're at the Ann Arbor Art Fair, you can just somebody's there and you're there and here's an opportunity, you can just say to them, do you have a favorite artist? Or do you have a favorite style of art? Boom, you just started a conversation. And people love to talk about their thoughts about things. It really doesn't take much to... When we were in Jerusalem, one of the people on our team would just say, good morning. It doesn't take much to start a conversation. Solution number two goes along with this. As you become more focused and more intentional about sharing your faith with people, as you get into this habit of doing this, it becomes easier and easier. It starts to feel more natural to engage with people. You become less shy, less fearful, simply through the practice of saying hello and striking up conversations. It's a learned thing for some of us, but yes, it can be learned. Eventually, it becomes almost second nature. You don't have to be the world's biggest schmoozer to simply say to somebody, "Good morning, how are you feeling? Hey, what's that you're reading?" One of the people on our team turned to somebody next to them and said, "I see you're eating a hamburger." And you're thinking, that person probably thought, "No, really." But guess what? It turned into a conversation. Went from food to the gospel. It's not that hard. Solution number three. And here's a real opportunity for all of us. Look for opportunities to help people. Somebody's got a flat tire. Stop and offer either to help with it or to call AAA for them. By the way, if you're a AAA member, you know you can call them on behalf of a friend. You see somebody's broken down, you pull up behind them, you check with them. If they don't have AAA, say, "I'll be your friend," and you call AAA. You say, "I'm here with my friend Fred, and you know he's got a flat tire. Can you come get them all fixed up?" Offer to help people. If it's on a busy road, by the way, and especially if you've got time, if you're not in a hurry to an appointment, if you've got some time, sometimes a very good thing, especially if somebody's broken down like on Telegraph or Woodward or a busy boulevard, if you can pull up about 15 to 20 feet behind them and hit your flashers and then go check with them, realize that you're actually serving as protection for them. The flashers on your car keep people away from them and from their car. And if you have the time to do that until the tow truck arrives, you've been a blessing to them. And in this day and age, when there's so little of that kind of love and kindness, that's going to stir up curiosity. What? People wonder, really? You stop and you're willing to do that? By the way, this happened, it's happened to me a couple of times, and one of them was last year. And there was three people on motorcycles that had, they were on Hines Drive, right in the middle of everything, a busy part of Hines Drive, and one of the motorcycles had broken down. So they're sitting there on the trying to fix it. Well, they're vulnerable, and I was in my car, so I parked my car about 15 feet behind them, hit the flashers, checked with them. They did have help coming. I said, "I'll just wait here until your help arrives and just kind of keep the cars off your back." Little things like that. Some, you know, an elderly person at a supermarket, they got a big cart full of stuff, offer to load their car for them. Little things like that open big doors. This happened to me Thursday. I had an errand at Costco. There's a lady. She was in one of the motorized shopping carts that they provide for people. And, man, her thing was full. And I said, "Can I help you load that into your car?" And as it turns out, she had this tiny little trunk. So it was like playing Tetris. But we got it, and she said, "Thank you so much, I appreciate it." I said, "Hey, it's just loving my neighbor as myself, because that's what my rabbi taught me to do." We're in Bloomfield Hills. Yeah, and I said, "I'm just trying to love my neighbor as myself. It's what my rabbi taught me to do." And then she saw I was wearing a Lion of Judah thing, and she goes, "Are you a Jew for Jesus?" And I said, "Yeah." And anyway, you know, it's hard to argue with somebody showing kindness. And kindness opens doors for you to share the faith. Now, in this case, she didn't want to pursue it, but she really appreciated the help. And it was a good testimony. And, you know, anytime you have an opportunity to represent Yeshua in an act of kindness, do so, because as often as not, it opens up doors for the gospel. All right. Here's the last part of this morning's little talk. Isaiah chapter 6, if you want to go ahead and turn there. Isaiah chapter 6 is the perfect motif for why every follower of Messiah should be in the habit of serving and sharing and telling about him. First of all, this particular chapter, Isaiah 6, takes place right after the death of King Uzziah, one of Israel's greatest kings. He wasn't perfect, but he reigned for over 50 years, I believe, in Judah. And people loved him. And so when he died, there was a big void. People in the nation really felt it. Now what happens? We've had stability and a good king for all these years. And Israel needed to be reminded who our king really is. Isaiah writes in chapter 6, "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord, high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, these burning angelic beings, each with six wings. With two wings they covered their faces, with two they covered their feet, and with two they were flying. And they were calling to one another, 'Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh, Adonai Tzevaot Melech Kol Haaretz Kvodo.' Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is filled with his glory. At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke." Think about it. These are angels. This isn't even the Lord. These are angels. And they call out, "Holy, holy, holy," and the whole place is shaking just at their voice. And the temple was filled with smoke. Isaiah cried out, "Woe is me! I am ruined! For I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." Now, I can pretty well guarantee you there wasn't a more righteous man on the face of this planet in his generation than Isaiah. I mean, really, would any of us even come close to comparing to him for godliness and for wisdom and for boldness, for faithfulness? And yet this most faithful man on earth, in the presence of the Almighty, said, "I'm a dead man, for I'm a man of unclean lips. I live among a people of unclean lips." See, it's not about comparing with each other. Because Isaiah could have looked at us and go, "I'm all right." But no, we are not the standard. He is. And Isaiah sees the holiness of God, and he realizes he is as good as dead in the presence of infinite purity and holiness, which kind of gives laugh to this whole claim that, oh, I don't need a middleman. I can go right to God. Are you kidding? Really, you're more righteous than Isaiah? I don't think so. So what happens? Isaiah realizes his sin, and he says, "Woe is me, I'm ruined." Well, what happens? Then it goes on to say, "Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it he touched my mouth and said, 'See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away, and your sin atoned for.' Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, 'Whom shall I send? And who will go for us?' And I said, 'Here am I. Send me.'" This is a perfect picture of what it means to be a disciple, a true disciple, to genuinely be a follower of Messiah Yeshua, to recognize how sinful you are in the sight of an infinite God, to mercifully be forgiven of all your sin and be declared right. And then out of sheer gratitude, to be eager to do whatever it is he needs done. It reminds me of Arnold Horseshack in Welcome Back, Kotter. Mr. Kotter asks a question, and Arnold Horseshack is, "Oh, oh, oh!" Right? In the presence of an infinite God, we realize our sin. And then that same infinite, merciful God makes atonement for our sin, and we realize, I've been made right. I'm okay. And then he says, I have a job. Who will do it? Who will go for me? And all of us should be like, please, here I am, send me. Let me do whatever you want done. That's gratitude. That's true discipleship. He who is forgiven little loves little. He who is forgiven much loves much. And we, brothers and sisters, have been forgiven hugely. Let's show our love by simply doing what he told us to do, and not to make excuses, just changes. Amen.